I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. The Philadelphia School District says that in order to head off a projected deficit of $1 billion over the next 5 years, it needs some major concessions from teachers totaling about $180 million. Included in the district's initial proposal that went public last week is a 13% cut for those making $55,000 and more, with lesser cuts for those with smaller salaries. The school day would be increased to 8 hours, and principals would have more authority over hiring, firing, and assigning teachers in their schools. Seniority would be eliminated and steps to increase salaries would be changed. Here to talk about these proposals and more is William Hite. He's the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia, the first of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. And nice to have you back on the show.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
You're welcome. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. I listed a few of the items that have gotten the most attention. You have said you want this contract to treat teachers like professionals. How does it do that?
Well, I think one of the things that's really important, Marty, in this conversation is that I am an educator, and I work with a team of educators, and we have the greatest respect for teachers and the teaching profession. And one thing that research clearly bears out is that having a strong and effective teacher is the single most important factor to student success. So if, in fact, we believe that teachers are professionals, I've been asking and want a contract that reflects that.
Well, just picking up on that, and I took that $55,000 salary and I cut it by 13%, came up with about an $8,000 decrease in salary to $47,000. If you want a good teacher, how can you pay them $47,000?
Yeah, and that's the really hard part about this conversation. And there are two parts to this. There's the economic reality part, and then there is a professionalizing the contract part. And I can't have this conversation without really recognizing the incredible financial circumstances that we're faced with here at the district. We had to borrow $300 million to meet our operating expenses for this year. And it is unfortunate that we're having to ask teachers, who we think are the most important part of our work and the most important part people who will deliver this work, but in a district where we're facing this types of deficit that we're facing, everyone, unfortunately, is being asked to make sacrifices. And some have already made sacrifices, like at non-reps took an 8% wage reduction plus furlough days, and they are contributing to the cost of their health care. Our SEIU, or Local 32BJ employees, those are our custodians and bus attendants, and they're the lowest paid in the district. They reached an agreement with the district where employees are contributing to their financial to the financial situation of the district by taking on average a 10% cut in revenue, and we've cut central office staff by about 43%. That means we've had to lay off about 400 individuals from our central administration. So we're faced with some pretty significant revenue challenges, and it's unfortunate that we're having to ask our employees, all employees, to make these types of concessions.
Let me quote something from Senator Vincent Hughes. He actually sent this to the chair of the School Reform Commission, Pedro Ramos, but here's some of what he says, and he is critical. He says, "The demands you seek hurt students and families that have already made significant financial sacrifices and absolve Governor Corbett of his responsibility for cutting over $300 million in funding for the school district over the past two budget cycles. Your decision not to seek more state dollars is inexcusable and an act of hypocrisy for someone charged with acting in the best interests of the children of Philadelphia." Have you gone to Harrisburg, and have you appealed to either Corbett or the Education Secretary for more money for Philadelphia?
We have. As a matter of fact, we've appealed to both, and as well have also and plan to appeal to our local officials here in the city, both at the mayor, at the mayoral level, and at the council level. And I think that generating revenue and asking for additional revenue has to be a key part of this conversation, just as the sacrifices that all of our employees are having to make has to be a part of the conversation.
another part of this initial contract has to do with, and this gets a little bit into the weeds, but it's important, the notion of steps that a teacher might take to increase their salary, whether they get an advanced degree or take courses. Looking at this initial proposal, that guarantee, or at least that possibility, looks like it is taken away from a teacher. Can you explain that?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have, now here's what we know. We know that we have historically, not just here in Philadelphia, but in many places across the country, teachers come into the profession. I did early on as a teacher, and every year that I work as a teacher, then I advance on a salary scale. Mm-hmm. Additionally, if in fact I go back to school and get an advanced degree, then I also get additional salary enhancements. And those things last typically throughout the career of an educator. The problem with that is that now it's been proven empirically that none of those things actually guarantee or produce higher academic outcomes for students. Instead, it is just pay for an additional year or staying on the job an additional year or for an advanced degree. And what we would like to do instead is really incentivize or at least provide incentives or awards for individuals who are impacting children and impacting the outcomes of children. And so instead of just having a pot of money that is geared towards advancing individuals on a salary scale because of the years you spend or the degrees that you are able to acquire, instead we want to provide that additional pay for individuals who are producing outcomes for children.
And do you have the criteria for those outcomes? Is it test-based criteria?
No, well, one of the indicators here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania is an evaluation system that does use student performance as one of the measures. And I've always submitted that I do think that academic performance should be one of the measure, but not the measure. And so I think that should be one of multiple measures that we use to determine the effectiveness of teachers, but not the measure to determine the effectiveness of teachers.
Would that be the principal's responsibility then to determine if a teacher is effective or not?
I believe so, and I believe that principals, as the instructional leaders of their buildings, should be equipped with the knowledge and skills to do that. I also would like to submit that we have worked with Philadelphia Teachers Union or Teacher Federation in the past, the PFT, to develop what we call a peer assistance and review process, where colleagues or other teachers also become a part of the observation process or the evaluation process for teachers.
This proposal gives a lot more authority to principals over hiring and firing and assigning teachers to various, both, I guess, in-classroom responsibilities, but also responsibilities outside the classroom. And I can imagine if you have a really good principal, that would make a lot of sense. But we know that not every principal in Philadelphia is a good one.
And there are no arguments from me there. And one of the things that we have committed to doing here is really beginning to develop the types of standards that our principals should have in order to be effective in those positions. And then we have to begin to use those standards to attract individuals here, to hire the right individuals who understand how to build the environments where teacher voice is a major part of the decision-making, where teachers feel free to collaborate with one another, or they feel free to provide feedback and or support. So one of the things that we know is that we're going to have to begin looking at the skills and the knowledge sets of our principals to ensure that those individuals are also equipped to provide and produce the type of environments that will allow teachers to actually support each other or to develop each other.
Looking at this proposal, there has been some concern about what happens to class size under this proposal. And I realize this is the, I guess, opening salvo when it comes to negotiations. But should there be a cap on class size?
Well, fundamentally, I believe there should be caps on class size if we were in a perfect scenario. And unfortunately, we're not in a perfect scenario, so we do have to now look at ways to be flexible in how we think about class size. And naturally, there are already some provisions in a labor agreement that allows for larger class sizes, those classes like band or health and physical education. But even beyond that, we should be thinking about if, in fact, we want dual enrollment courses, and those are college types of courses that are available in our high schools, or if we want courses where students are accessing technology, and so you have students from multiple schools who are signing into a class, then there does need to be some flexibility in how we think and approach class size maximums. And this will allow some flexibility to use various models for educating students, not just the current model that's in place.
And about a minute before we have to say goodbye, but let's take a basic eighth grade math class. Would that class size, could that possibly increase to the size of the school band, for instance?
No, I mean, and the things that we're attempting to do is really focus on those areas where it's very important for students to learn content, those things that are associated with reading, in some cases mathematics, as you indicated, eighth grade mathematics is an area where we struggle. That's not a place where we'd want to take a class to 50. Right. That's a place where we'd want to maintain a much lower class size. Additionally, in the grades where students learn to read, I do think it's really important for us to really focus on maintaining sizes that are smaller than even our current class size maximums. But those are critical areas. There are other areas, however, you could think very differently about those things.
And just a final question, will all classrooms have enough textbooks for all the students?
Yes, and I think, and I'm glad you asked that question, because removing provisions from the contract doesn't necessarily mean we are taking away the things that those provisions provide.
Well, you
and
know
so
what?
Instructional materials are really important.
I hear you. William Hite, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Marty, thank you.
Supporting WHYY, the Academy of Vocal Arts, presents Don Quixote, March 2nd through 9th, in AVA's Helen Corning Warden Theater, and March 12th and 14th at Centennial Hall in Haverford. Jules Massenet's opera is a lyrical ode to the chivalrous idealist Don Quixote. Christopher Makatsouris conducts the AVA Opera Orchestra, with staging by Tito Capobianco. 215-735-1685 or avaopera.org.
The budgetary discussions currently taking place in Washington present challenges for people in our community and for WHYY. Yet, at the same time, we have continued to expand our services. I'm Bill Morazzo. Your support to WHYY in the last 5 years has offset government losses, yet resulted in the growth of the services you rely on. A donation today will enable us to continue to fulfill our promise to you. Visit WHYY.org to make a donation.
Next time in Studio 360, when she was 8 years old, the comedian Sandra Bernhard saw the musical Hello, Dolly. And sitting in the audience just felt wrong.
Right from the get-go, I assumed that I should be a part of the cast. Why am I not on stage?
Hello.
Sandra Bernhard, next time in Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC.
Louie, it's so tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. The Philadelphia School District leaders say that in order to prevent a deficit of about $1 billion over the next 5 years, they're asking teachers to make major concessions that would amount to $180 million in savings. We just said goodbye to William Heites, the superintendent of the School District of Philadelphia. And joining us now is Ron Whitehorn, and he retired from the district after over 20 years teaching middle school science. He's a board member of Youth United for Change, a contributor to the Public School Notebook, and he's also a member of the Philadelphia Coalition Advocating for Public Schools. And Ron Whitehorn, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning. And to our listeners, we do want to get some callers in on the conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Ron, you described this proposal from the district as mean-spirited. How so?
Well, I think the scope of it, this contract proposal, and I think it has to be taken seriously based on their fiscal situation. It's not just an opening ploy. This would basically gut the union contract. All that would be left is the grievance procedure, and there's really not much left to grieve about. And I think some of the language, like eliminating the provisions around materials and around teachers' lounges and those kinds of things, they don't strike a very good chord with teachers who know historically that those things haven't always been provided.
Well, and I'm not speaking for the superintendent here, but I read a number of interviews that he did about this proposal, saying from the district's perspective that of course there would be enough textbooks, and of course there would be drinking fountains and all the things that teachers have asked for. Is there credibility on this issue?
I'm afraid not. I mean, if you go in schools today, you'll find that reams of paper are like gold bars. Teachers don't have enough paper, they don't have enough pencils, they spend on average hundreds of dollars, if not thousands, to buy supplies for their classrooms. The schools are terribly under-resourced. And I don't doubt Dr. Heights' sincerity, but he really needs to get out and get into schools and talk to people in classrooms, because these shortages are very real.
As we know, the government, the state government, has cut funding for public schools across the state, and it certainly has had an impact here in Philadelphia. There are calls for Height and Ramos and others, perhaps even the mayor, Michael Nutter, to go to Harrisburg to ask for more money. But knowing the fiscal situation of the state, do you think the state has the money and has the willingness to send more money to the district here in Philadelphia?
Well, I think the state certainly has the money. I mean, we live in a state in which 70% of the corporations pay no tax. We don't tax fracking at the rate of other states. We're engaged in expensive new prison construction. I think changing the priorities in Harrisburg could produce enormous amounts of revenue that could be used for education and human services. And I think that's going to be an uphill struggle, given the political character of the governor and the state legislature. But that's what we should be pressing for. We also could do things, and these are all things that have been raised, incidentally. We could renegotiate the bad interest swap deals that were made with banks. It cost the city and the school district $331 million. These were banks that were bailed out by the public. Why not ask them to give up a little? All the sacrifice is being demanded from students who are being devastated by these cuts and school employees.
How do you suggest the teachers then make this point? And are we talking about busloads of teachers going to Harrisburg, protests, demonstrations? How do you suggest moving forward on this issue?
Well, all of the above, and I think I want to point out that we met, and I'm speaking here about PCAPS, we met with Dr. Height. We made clear to him our willingness to collaborate with the district in terms of pressing for more funds. He said he thought that was great. We've asked him to follow up on that and have heard nothing. And I'm glad you raised the thing from Vincent Hughes. I mean, in fact, the district has not gone after funding, and I think there's a consensus among the city's elites that we have to downsize our school district. And this just isn't acceptable. This is going to devastate our students and our working class families in the city. We have to be prepared to organize and press them to do the right thing here.
But even if the district got some additional funds from Harrisburg, it's hard to imagine that they would get all the funds that they needed. So there still needs to be some cuts or some belt tightening in the district. Where do you think the fat is? And then we'll get to some callers.
Well, I don't see much fat. I mean, I think that if the district joined with the union and with the community and fought for more funding, then there could be an honest negotiation about what has to give, at least in the short term, to get us through this. But that hasn't happened. I mean, as far as fat goes, at least at the level of the contract, I don't see it. I mean, we have the largest class sizes in the region. We have the lowest teachers' salaries. How can we talk about improving the quality of education without addressing these conditions? They're talking about fewer counselors, fewer certified librarians. I think it's obvious that these things are not going to improve schools, and we have to, if Dr. Height and the SRC was saying, gee, we don't have any money, there's nowhere we can get the money, we're just going to have to cut, that would at least be honest. But they're actually talking about at the end of this process we're going to improve the quality of education, and I really think that's a problem.
Well, let me quickly reintroduce you, and that's Ron Whitehorn, the second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. He retired from the Philadelphia School District after over 20 years teaching middle school science. He's a founding board member of Youth United for Change, a contributor to the Public School Notebook, and he is also a member of the Philadelphia Coalition Advocating for Public Schools. And we've been talking about this proposal that went public last week, calling for some pretty draconian salary and benefit cuts for teachers here in the district. We began our conversation talking with William Height, the superintendent of the school district, saying that this is the reality, and while there are some serious cuts, he believes it can also benefit students and improve the quality of teaching. We're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And if you have children that go to school here in Philadelphia, or you work for the school district, or you have worked for the school district, we do want to hear from you. Let me see what Tina from Mount Airy has to say. And Tina, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks. Dan. Yeah, I'm a mother of two students in the Philadelphia school district, and you know, my question when hearing about this proposal was, you know, look, if we want to improve the education, the way you don't do it by cutting people's pay, and How is cutting the pay going to do anything to improve the education here? Why not do something that's merit-based, you know, and do some evaluations of the teachers and reward the teachers that are doing a good job and look at the teachers that are not doing a good job?
Well, and this is coming from the district and from probably the SRC, which is that the district just had to borrow $300 million. It faces something like $1 billion in projected deficit over the next 5 years. And that is their argument for making some of these cuts. Does that sit with you, Tina?
No, absolutely not. I think, you know, my kids go to schools where the teachers are, you know, the teachers that they've had have been really fantastic and have been really you know, important in their lives. And the last thing I would want to see is have these teachers, you know, basically be facing a 15% less pay. That's not at all how that they should be trying to address their budget cuts. I don't understand why they are not trying to look at the teachers that are not doing a good job, getting rid of them, and keeping and rewarding the teachers that are doing a good job. It just does not make any sense. And it is really troubling for me. I live in the city of Philadelphia. I have invested a lot in the city. You know, many of the people that I know have left the city just for, you know, because of the schools. Mm. And so I think it's going to detrimentally affect the city and who is choosing to live here.
Well, Tina, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me give you a chance, Ron Whitehorn, to respond.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that what this proposal will do, and I think it's the intent of the proposal, frankly, is to drive experienced teachers and the better teachers, frankly, the teachers with the kinds of resumes where they can get jobs elsewhere, it's going to drive them out of the system. They're going to be gone, and because they're at the upper steps, that's going to save the district a lot of money. But as Tina points out, it's certainly not going to help our students. And it's not going to attract the best and the brightest to Philadelphia, these kinds of salaries.
Are you concerned, Ron, about the proposed elimination of positions based on seniority?
Yes, I am. I think that there's plenty of evidence that shows that experienced teachers, the lack of experienced teachers, particularly in our most impoverished schools, is a real serious problem. It's been an historic concern of the community in Philadelphia. This is going to exacerbate the problem. Of course, not every experienced teacher is a great teacher, and not every new teacher is struggling. But in general, experience is very important, and we need to support and retain experienced, quality teachers. We're not. The average lifespan of a teacher in Philadelphia is 5 years now.
Tina,
what we should be all about is like creating a stable cadre of professional, qualified folks. That should be the aim.
Tina, thanks for your call to Radio Times. I'll get some other callers up at 1-888-477-9499. Ron, what do you think of this idea of performance-based pay? It's not a new idea, and it's certainly a part of what looks like a trend in education these days.
Well, I'm suspicious of it. I think the devil is in the details. I do favor creating like lead teacher positions, creating positions that are part in the classroom, part in mentoring other teachers, that could keep teachers, quality teachers, really good teachers, engaged so they don't exit the classroom and go into administration. I think other districts and other unions, like in Cincinnati, have negotiated those kinds of things. I think they're very good, particularly because teachers are involved in evaluating who should get those positions. It's not just at the discretion of the administration. I think the metric for how you measure teaching quality is very important, and I don't think standardized tests should be the main metric. They may well be a small piece of it. But I really don't think. I think we're sort of getting into a whole. We could do a whole show on that.
We could.
But I really think there's a lot of problems associated with using standardized tests as the metric for evaluating teachers.
Let me get Chaim from looks like Yaden to join our conversation. And Chaim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question for you and your guests. Given that the public school systems are, you know, somewhat being neglected nationwide, and also given the success of the privatization of the prison system, I wonder how involved are the corporate interests in pressuring the district's elected officials to neglect the public school system? And I'll take that answer off the air. Thank you for the show.
Thank you for calling in. Ron, do you have a position on that?
Yeah, I think that's a very serious problem. There's a huge lobby, a corporate school reform lobby, that basically argues we should treat schools as businesses. They support privatization of schools. They support turning over traditional public schools to charters. They have an enormous amount of money. They've impacted both political parties. Here locally, the Philadelphia School Partnership is an example of this that's basically pressing what they call a portfolio model in which there's a significant degree of privatization. And I think, you know, that instead of talking about investing in quality neighborhood public schools, they've shifted the conversation to treating schools as business, treating parents as consumers rather than as citizens. And, you know, we're really trying to push back, I'm speaking here as PCAPs,
right,
against that whole agenda, which I think is a real serious problem.
Well, that's another issue that we have done whole shows about and probably should return to. But let me get David from Wilmington, Delaware, to join our conversation. And, David, go ahead. You are on Radio Times.
Yes. I hear everything in terms of giving up salary, whatever, on the teacher side. Many of my friends that have worked in the Philadelphia school system and have worked in private schools and parochial schools, the layers of, on the administrative side, I'm talking about $1,000 jobs.
You know, David, we have a terrible phone line, but I see what you're trying to say, and I'm just going to speak it for you to Ron Whitehorn. From his perspective, and it sounds like from people that he knows, he feels as if the district here is administration heavy. Do you agree with that? And I should say that William Height said that a number of layoffs at the district level have occurred.
Well, I think that's true historically, but I have to say at this point, the central office is really a bare bones operation, and I'm critical of the sort of bureaucratic command and control model of school management that we've had in this city. But I think we do need administrative support. We do need offices that can help develop curriculum, that can provide support for classroom teachers, that can help with professional development, and so those are important functions mm-hmm. that a central administration should do. We're also turning over struggling schools to charters, the whole Renaissance Charter program. Why not develop our own capacity as a public school district to turn around struggling schools? We have the folks, the principals, the teachers, the collective experience to do that. Instead, we're abdicating that.
We're almost out of time here, Ron, but looking at this proposal from the district, it does give more authority to principals. Where do you and where do your organization stand on that? About 30 seconds.
Well, I think that the where the union clearly stands is that teachers need protection from arbitrary and capricious actions by principals. And I think you made a good point earlier that the quality of principals is uneven. If you have a great principal, then yes, you don't have many of those concerns. But not all principals are great, and if they're not, we don't want to be at their mercy. And particularly in this time, a time of fiscal austerity, where the protections traditionally afforded by seniority become especially important.
Well, Ron, we have to end our discussion. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
It was my pleasure, Marty.
You're welcome. And that's Ron Whitehorn. He's a founding board member of Youth United for Change, a contributor to the Public School Notebook, and a member of the Philadelphia Coalition Advocating for Public Schools. Stay with us. Another guest waiting in the wings. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania supports WHYY. Do your drinking habits cause problems in your personal or professional life? Do you drink to cope with stress? These may be signs of alcohol dependence. UPenn is conducting a research study using naltrexone, an FDA-approved medication for use in treating alcoholism. If you are 18 or older, have an alcohol problem, and want to reduce your drinking, you may qualify for the study. Details at drinkinginphilly.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Sandra Day O'Connor, the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court. When she graduated from law school in 1952, she called at least 40 law firms.
And not one of them would give me an interview. I was a woman, and they said, we don't hire women.
Justice O'Connor has a new book called Out of Order. Join us.
Today at 3 and again at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. When it comes to bullying, both understanding it and preventing it, Emily Bazelon says there are no easy answers. Also, data junkies are tracking their every step, calorie, and snore to help get fit. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. Just to recap, the Philadelphia School District is facing a projected $1 billion deficit over the next 5 years. Its initial proposal to reduce some of that red ink includes major cuts in pay and benefits for teachers, district employees. It gives principals more authority over hiring and firing and removes some of the steps to salary increases, including advanced degrees. We began with William Height, the superintendent of the district. We just said goodbye to Ron Whitehorn, a board member of the Philadelphia Coalition advocating for public schools. And joining us now is Andrew Rotherham. He's co-founder and partner of Bellwether Education, I should say. He blogs at eduwonk.com and writes the School for Thought column for time.com. And Andrew Rotherham, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we're turning to you, I guess, for an outside perspective on at least this initial proposal coming from the district. What's your initial response to the district's opening salvo for contract negotiations?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that it surfaces. One is it's clear that Philadelphia is facing some really tough circumstances, and there's going to be some hard decisions that have to be made. And so you can see that in the kinds of things that are being discussed. Second, there's always a rhythm to these negotiations, and there's always a lot of drum beating before you get to the deal. Mm-hmm. It's early, and you're seeing a lot of that drum beating from both sides, and sort of laying out and sort of people are starting to eye each other mm-hmm. sort of warily and move around the ring and so forth before the real conversations get going. And I think you're seeing a lot of that right now as well.
Well, but the idea of a 13% cut in benefits and salary is pretty eye-catching.
Look, it is, and the fiscal situation that Philadelphia faces is pretty eye-catching. And so I think, the district has put an offer on the table that says here's how we're going to have to make these numbers work, and clearly everybody wants to figure out a way, you know, to do this that minimizes the impact on kids. And it's now going to be incumbent on the union to come up with, you know, in a situation like this, no is not an answer. So what's the alternative? And there are a lot of places in any school budget where you can make changes and so forth. And the conversation needs to move to, okay, if you don't want to see these kinds of cuts, then what other kinds of things are people willing to put on the table and talk about? Because what's clear is that the money is not there just to continue to do things the way that they've been done.
But can you make cuts, professionalize teachers, and also improve education?
You know, you can do these things. They can happen at once. And I think what you're seeing are really good if you come a couple hundred miles south, you know, Washington, D.C., which, you know, just a few years ago, no one would have said is a model. You know, they've got a new contract, and it was obviously very controversial, made national news at the time. But the real story now is the silence. You don't really hear a lot about Washington. You're not sort of seeing that kind of acrimony. The superintendent and the union are working very well. They've got a new evaluation system that's much more rigorous than what they used to do. They're making modifications to it in partnership with the union as issues arise and as people learn sort of what works and what doesn't work and so forth. DC didn't have an overflow of money. They ended up repurposing how they pay teachers and really changing what the pay curve looks like for a lot of teachers and giving teachers opportunities to accept more professional responsibility in exchange for accepting the kind of risk that goes along with most professions. And I'm not saying that DC is the only way to do this or it's not without its problems, but what it does show is there are creative ways through these where you can accomplish mm-hmm. multiple goals at the same time.
Oftentimes these negotiations become very adversarial. How do you tamp that down?
Well, you know, listening to the conversation this morning, I think that was, you know, that what you see here is, I think, you know, Dr. Height laid out a vision that I think is a professional vision, and I think most people would agree is a much more professional vision for education than the way schools operate now. I mean, the Philadelphia contract, like a lot of these contracts, it's unbelievable how prescriptive it is and how it every down to every little detail, and it's simply not a professional document. It's at odds with any idea mm-hmm. of professionalism. But at the same time, what you heard from your second guest was there's an intense lack of trust, and you have people who have been in the system for a long time, and many of them have actually never experienced good management. So there isn't a lot of trust that we're going to, you know, these things will work out if they're not down to every letter in the, you know, everything's not tacked down to every letter in the contract. And so what has to happen here is you have to build that kind of trust. People have to be willing to take risks, but people need to recognize that you have a lot of teachers who have been treated pretty shabbily for a long time and are understandably suspicious. And so both sides need to sort of come to the table, and there needs to be some give to move forward.
This issue of class size, of course, a very important one to teachers and to students. How important do you think it is here in Philadelphia as you understand this issue?
Look, it's important everywhere, and class size is one of these issues where there's actually very clear research, but we still talk about it in education as if, you know, people, anything kind of goes. It's one of these issues that, frankly, it's as if one side says the moon's made of green cheese, one side says the moon's made of rock, and the media reports it as, you know, the debate over the lunar surface goes on. Will we ever know? I mean, we know a lot, and we know, here's what we know on class size. In the early grades, small classes are very important. For at-risk kids who are struggling, small classes are very important. But when we say small classes, this is really small. We're talking under 16, under 15 kids. And so the kinds of things we talk about in these contract negotiations, this is a very common provision in contracts across the country. The difference between 26 and 28, things like that, they're really not material. And that's where you can start to make some changes to save some money and without seriously impacting instruction. The other we should be doing is figuring out how do you drive as much money to those early grades as possible to get the classes small and get kids off to the start that they need. Obviously, all that is contingent on teacher effectiveness, and the research is very clear that effective teachers matter much more than class size. And so reducing classes, especially in those early grades, has to be done in a context of really being sensitive to effectiveness and making sure you have the best educators you can in front of kids. And obviously, I think if you look through that contract right now, there's a whole bunch of things in there that get in the way of that.
But you don't want classes of 35, 40, 45 children, do you?
No, of course not. You can take this to absurd extremes, but the level at which we're talking about in a lot of places, the moving a kid or two one way or the other is not material. No, you can obviously take this to irrational and absurd extremes on the high end.
One of the things that Dr. Height said is, and he said, based on research, the idea that if a teacher goes out and gets a master's degree, that doesn't automatically mean that they are a better teacher and that their students do better. Can you talk a bit about that? Then I do want to get to some callers. What do we know?
The research is very clear. These degrees, they can bring a lot of benefit in a bunch of different ways, but there are not studies that show that it results in improved student outcomes. The exception to that is there's some evidence that math teachers going back and getting a degree in math, not in math education, but studying additional math, can help, and the same thing can be true of science teachers. But just your average degree that people are going back and getting that has been paid for by the school district, you then move along and you get more pay. There's no evidence that actually improves effectiveness. And so what we ought to be doing, we don't invest enough in professional development for teachers. It's one of the reasons that we see sort of teacher effectiveness plateau so early in people's careers. We need to be investing a lot more, but the way we do it now is just sending people back to get these certifications and get these master's degrees is not the way to do it. At least that's, you know, the research is pretty clear on that.
Is there a need for seniority?
You know, this is one of these conversations. Every field respects seniority, but professions also respect effectiveness. And what's happened in education is things have gotten weighted so far towards seniority at the expense of effectiveness. And you can look at early on in the contract, the current contract, you can see this, all the various seniority restrictions that are put on, how they affect hiring and so forth. That's just not, that's at odds, again, with the notion of professionalism. And what we need to do is balance seniority, respecting people who have long experience, but also respecting effectiveness. And, you know, it's interesting. So in Philadelphia, the model for this would be actually, ironically, a great place to look would be the Philadelphia Eagles. The NFL has done a pretty good job of they protect veterans. You get you can't be treated capriciously. You have some additional protections, but it has no impact on playing time. And who's on the field during an NFL game is based on merit. Coaches and so forth can make those decisions based on merit. I mean, there's obviously a lot of issues in the NFL, but it sure shows there is a way you can balance protections for respecting seniority and protecting people with making sure that when it comes to actually doing the job, you have the very best people out there at the front line doing the job. And we are not, and Philadelphia is hardly alone in this. This is a problem across the country. We're not doing a good job with that.
Let me get some callers in at 1-888-477-9499. And it looks like we have Barbara from Germantown joining us on Radio Times. And Barbara, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I'm a retired English department head. I retired from the A. Philip Randolph Career Technical High School. Mm-hmm. The teachers, it's great for them to be assessed on their performance, but if you have no control over your resources, for instance, in our school, the library closed down a number of years ago, and the career technical students need to have actually a higher reading level because their materials are written at a higher level than the rest of the reading material in high schools. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important, and the contract that the teachers have had addressed those issues of materials, resources, counselors, librarians. And
well, Barbara, let me take your point, because I think it's an important one. And Andrew Rotherham, she's saying it's fine to evaluate us, but if we don't have the resources, how valuable is that evaluation?
Yeah, and I think this goes exactly to the breakdown. There's just such a lack of trust. You listen to the kinds of things that are being discussed in the Philadelphia media, the kinds of things that are being raised. Teachers are worried that they're not going to have basic supplies. We're talking about things like, you know, drinking fountains. In most professions, you don't have people worried about sort of, you don't hear conversations about, you know, in most workplaces, people worry that they're going to have the basic tools to do their job. And what that just reflects is just how bad things have been for a long time. And I think what's incumbent on the superintendent is to show that they're going to do things differently, and some of these problems and so forth are not going to continue to exist. And what's incumbent upon the union is being willing to, you know, if presented with that evidence, being willing to take a risk on that and being willing to move forward. Because, again, this contract, I think if you read through it, it's clearly at odds with what it's going to take to run highly effective schools. And on that note, we haven't talked about it. You know, it's ridiculous. These negotiations and what's going on now are going to have more impact on Philadelphia kids, really, than any other decision that's going to be made in the near term by the school board, things that are happening over in Harrisburg, and yet it's all happening in private. And it's really absurd that in 2012 that these negotiations, and so these issues, and people come on this show and elsewhere and are talking about, you know, these various issues, and that, you know, they're not able to actually be privy to the actual conversations between the union and between the school district. It's high time to have those conversations in public so that the public can really suss out what the issues are and judge for themselves and not hear it through all these various secondhand accounts.
So bring in the cameras or bring in the microphones and let the public listen and hear as the negotiations go on?
Absolutely. And this is not a sort of gotcha for the union or a gotcha for the school district. Both sides do things in the negotiation process that run counter to the public interest. And there's a rhythm, as I said at the beginning, there's a rhythm to these negotiations. And at some point, the two sides start to kind of work together to get to a deal and get something done. And that deal is not always in the public interest. And so the people who really have an interest in having cameras in there and allowing the media to sit in on these things is the public, and to really hear these issues aired and surfaced and so forth, and, you know, hear both sides be able to make a decision for themselves. It's ridiculous that something that has this much impact on the day-to-day lives of students in a city like Philadelphia is being done behind closed doors.
Barbara, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Before we hear from Vicki, though, we did get someone who posted something on Facebook, Andrew, saying I don't know how long ago she taught in the Philadelphia School District, but she said, I was given three classes of 40 students and 30 books, one class of 23 students and 10 books, and one class of 30 students and zero books. I think just underscoring what you have said all along, which is that there is a past here and a sense of mistrust looking into the future.
Yeah, I mean, the best way to say it is people can't be stuck in the past and can't start the conversation by saying, well, this is what happened in the 1960s, 1970s. But at the same time, it's incumbent upon the school administration to be sensitive to that and make sure that they're acknowledging that there have been these problems and laying out a compelling case for why that's not going to continue.
Let me get to, it looks like Vicki from Westchester to join our conversation. And Vicki, we're trying to, there we go. Vicki, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi. I want us all to reflect on what happened during the bank bailouts, that those banks had to, quote unquote, pay out their executives because they needed to attract the best and the brightest. And even though they didn't have the money, they had to pay them oodles of bonuses because then they wouldn't have gotten the best and the brightest. And yet when it comes to our teachers, we have to cut our teacher salaries by 13%. But yet we have to attract the best and the brightest. And the double standard is so infuriating to me that people stand, those who supported those executives getting the bonuses, don't support our teachers and these people who are in the trenches. And this very, it's a
well, you
very
know, Vicki, let me take your point only because we have a minute before we have to say goodbye to our guests. And Andrew Rotherham, I'd be curious what you say back to Vicki and also, you know, how frustrated and angry she is.
Yeah, look, I think everyone, I don't know anyone who's not frustrated by the banks and not frustrated with what happened over the last few years, but it's sort of a non sequitur in terms of what we're dealing with in our part of the world, what needs to happen here. It's easy to be outraged by a lot of corporate behavior. It doesn't really do a lot to advance what we're trying to do to make our schools better. I will say, you know, I am one who, one of the things I really liked about what they did in D.C., for instance, is when teachers were exited out of the system because of performance, there was some severance given. And traditionally, we haven't done that, and people are like, why do we pay people not to, you know, not to work? But in fact, if you do look in the private sector, that's what they do. When people are let go, they're usually given a package. It helps it go down easier, and obviously at the senior level, those packages can be generous, sometimes outrageously so, but there's a lesson there in how you do it. And traditionally, we haven't done that in education, and we should be thinking about if we treat teachers like professionals, and we have to, and we don't now, it's both sides of the equation, and it's not just the professional side in terms of the risk, evaluation, those kinds of things, a much more merit-based system. It's also got to be on the compensation side and how you take care of people. It's a double-sided coin, and we have to make it balanced for teachers. You have to do both sides.
Andrew Rotherham, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Co-founder, partner of Bellwether Education. That's a nonprofit working to improve education outcomes for low-income students. He blogs at eduwonk.com and writes the School for Thought column for time.com. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour, but stay with us. We'll be right back.